is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Ball leaning out of the pagoda, looking up the home stretch now. The checkered flag is ready here at the finish line. Maury Rose is putting on a tremendous flash of speed as he nears the finish line. And there the checkered flag's waving, and Maury Rose is the winner. Rose is the winner of the 31st running of the Indianapolis 500-mile Motor Speedway Classic.
Thanks, Sid. Wonderful. Boy, am I happy to win this gold. I can thank those mechanics, Merle Bellinger, the boss, and George Soleil, Buster, Frenchie, all of the boys. They sure did a good job, because if this little beauty didn't run, I sure couldn't win it.
Still, Ward, then Rathman, and they're fast approaching some other cars. Sid, pick it up.
Yes, Eddie Johnson, Paul Goldsmith, and number 17, Carter, right in front of them here. And as they come down, it's Rathman ahead of Ward by a fair margin. Looks like about 65 feet right now.
It's Plastic City here in turn one. Everybody has their plastic shields over their heads, or their multicolored umbrellas are up. As John DeCamp pointed out earlier, it's a curious sky. A lot of dark, ominous clouds will scud in here for a few minutes, and then there's a patch of not sunlight, but at least a clearing sky behind it. So perhaps that forecast will hold up, but we could get a race in here sometime today. That's the story in turn one, Sid. It's mighty wet up here in the photo deck right now.
AJ, is it irreparable, or can you get it going?
I think we can get it going.
What happened?
Well, I don't know. Coovan just come over and hit my left front wheel real hard, and he said his car just went to the right, so I don't really know.
They are side by side. Al Jr. down on the low side. He's got the position. He gets by Scott Goodyear. It may not be enough, but at least Al Jr. now holds second position in this race.
Sam Hornish Jr. is off the pace. Chris Denary is in front of you, just off of four.
Yes, he is now heading down pit road on the last lap just in front of us. We noticed here on the outside of the track, he took the turnout of four very wide, and he scraped the wall with his right back rear tire, and it slowed him down. Hornish had been working every avenue down the front straightaway. He had been able to move his car inside and out, but that time he was too loose and he hit the wall.
Welcome, Trackside, 1070 The Fan, WFNI, Indianapolis, from our downtown studios in Indianapolis. From the MS Communications headquarters, I'm Kevin Lee, along with Kurt Cavan of the Indianapolis Star. Matt Hicks is our studio producer. We heard in our open some of the highlights from previous 500s, courtesy of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, and actually one that predates the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, 1947, then 51. 60, 73, 82, 92, and Sam Hornish Jr.'s crash in 2002. So we'll continue to revisit some of the great moments as we celebrate the centennial of the Indianapolis 500, and we visit with you every weeknight at 7 o'clock here on Trackside with Cavan and Kevin, and Donald Davidson will be in at 8 o'clock tonight again, taking your telephone calls coming up after 8 tonight. Well, it's good to be back in studio, and I will admit I'm finally tired. I felt good yesterday, but today I'm just a bit groggy, so it's going to be another day or so before I feel back as close to normal as I ever am.
I was surprised you could announce that you were at MS Communications Worldwide Headquarters, because we weren't sure where you came from or who you were. Your visitor pass had expired.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I may miss a few more between now and the end of the month as I try to bounce a few things and reacquaint myself to my family.
Has it gotten a little busy?
It's been a little bit busy. I've never been gone. I have been gone. I was gone 7 or 8 days for the Super Bowl, but that was a little different. At least you're in the same country, and there's just a lot more going on. The kids are older now, and both are playing either softball or baseball and trying to drive race cars. So it's a lot to take care of, so we appreciate you holding down the fort. And
it was
look
quite
forward
fun.
To visiting with Donald.
I enjoyed doing Donald.
That's cool hanging out with Donald, isn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you can lay that responsibility on me or hand it off, as it were. Actually, I volunteered last night just because I knew if you weren't tired last night, you were going to be. And
I wasn't tired yesterday. That tired. It wasn't an issue of needing a break. Actually, I was up till 11:15 or so trying to catch up on stuff last night. It was more just I wanted to go to Little League practice, and I hadn't had the chance to do that. The only times I've been in town, it's rained. So I did that last night. Glad I did. Had fun with that. And we'll do that as much as we can here as we move forward and still try to handle our obligations here. I guess I'll spend a moment just talking about the Brazil experience, although I really have not experienced Brazil. I went from the hotel to the racetrack and back, and it's even less of a normal race week experience. And in this case, it's actually really convenient. It, for a race weekend, it's as good as you can get because the hotel lobby to the TV compound is about 100 yards away, and that's right next to the garage area. And then you're, you know, it's a little bit of a walk to pit lane, but whatever. Everything is there and compact. The media center is 100 yards the other way from the hotel. But never saw any of Sao Paulo. And admittedly, I wasn't going to leave. You know, I've just heard there are concerns. We were going to go out in a group for to a nice steak place or something on Sunday night. But once the race was postponed until Monday, really just wanted to get in and was planning on getting and get to bed early. But this is only in another country would I have seen this story develop. I got one channel in English. It was CNN International. So I've got that on while I'm on the computer on Sunday night because I would never, you know, I'd love to be more of a political junkie and more up to date with current events, but two kids, six jobs, I've got to pay attention to what I have to pay attention to. So I'm not watching CNN except this night, and I'm hearing major announcement, major briefing by President Obama at 10:30 Eastern time. So, all right, I'll keep watching. So I see the Osama bin Laden story develop and see the first announcement of that. And that was, you know, I'm glad I stayed up and watched that and stayed up through President Obama's address that night. So that was interesting to be a quarter of the way, a third of the way around the world as that story developed. Some people have asked me what was the reaction there in a foreign country. I can't really say because the only people I really interacted with were Americans or people within the IndyCar series that might be from another country. But the people there are very nice. Almost everyone in the hotel spoke at least some English. Some spoke English very well, the people that you needed to deal with. So from my standpoint, it was okay. You know, it's tough making that long of a flight, but it went better than I expected. I've never done a flight longer than 3.5 or 4 hours, and I never got to the point where I said, I've got to get off this airplane. The flight there was fine. I really didn't mind it that much. And the flight back, even with a couple-hour delay there and back, it went okay. So far, so good on long trips. I think the 18 hours or so to Australia would be challenging. Is that what about it is?
No, it's not quite that far. Not quite? Not in one stretch.
And you probably break it up. What, do you fly to L.A. and then
fly to
L.A.
And then it's probably 14 from L.A. So
okay.
In total, it was... And I've done that a couple times. You had an advantage and yet a disadvantage. I told you going in that you would be staying at the Holiday Inn on property. So you were at essentially the fairgrounds. I tried last night to give people real words for what this were. You were on the convention center / fairgrounds property, and the team stayed in the pig barn that looked like a livestock headquarters.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that when I first got there, but...
Well, you forget they get the teams in there.
Yeah,
and
it really
forth.
Just seemed like a huge garage.
So I had to stay last year at the Hilton, which is south of downtown. You were on the north side, the equivalent of 12 o'clock on your dial, and on the Beltway, and I was essentially south of the downtown, maybe just a little southwest. So that was about a 35-minute ride, and through traffic, through town every day, back and forth, not much fun.
So 35 minutes, was it a mile?
No, it was probably probably 8 miles.
What is it from the track to the airport? It can't be more than 7 or 8 miles?
Yeah, it's probably 5 to 10 miles.
It took us an hour and 45 minutes.
But you're going...
On Monday at noon.
You're going on the freeway, or at least theoretically, that's the direct route.
Yeah.
In the case of getting to downtown, it was basically through boulevards, I'll say. Not really streets where you have stop signs every few minutes, but frequent stops.
Mm-hmm.
And, boy, you're with drivers who know the area and don't come to complete stops and gas and go and brake hard. I mean, it's, you know, it's at least a GP2 race for these guys. And they're going and they're going quick and you're getting thrown around in the car. And it's a little unsettling for the stomach and not the most enjoyable 3 or 4 days that I was there. And then when you got downtown, you had absolutely no interest in leaving the hotel. In fact, they said, don't leave by yourself, don't leave in small groups, don't ride with somebody you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, so I thought it was probably best just to stay in and get some work done, and worked on my pronunciation of Itaipava all weekend. So I got that down by the third day.
I still can't spell it, but I have to look it up.
Itaipava. Obrigado means thank you, and that's about the extent of it. I learned a few more words that I could throw out now and again in Portuguese. So good thing, because we may be going twice next year. Yes. That's not 100%. But if the funding comes through, it will happen. I think September 12th is the date mentioned for 2012.
Okay. We did not hear a specific date.
Well, I read that
from this end.
I read that in a Portuguese report, because that was all I saw. It was in Portuguese, and then I saw September 12th, and I recognized that. I don't know if IndyCar is locked into that, but that is a date that I have seen. I believe I've heard others say September, so it's not a back-to-back type situation, which would be more convenient for IndyCar, but it's not far enough away. I think it's only about 2.5-3 hours away, so that'd be too close to have it in back-to-back weeks.
It would be, and the other thing is, if you're IndyCar, you do not want to be out of the country and out of sight, out of mind for that long of a period. Although you know this race does go off in a better time slot than Japan, but being out of the country from a bringing sponsors to the race to you know servicing your clients to you know when you show up at an IndyCar race at Texas, for example, you get the other track representation from other SMI tracks. You know, there are people who are there for business meetings. Same thing when you go to a Kentucky or when the ISC tracks were heavy previously. Their other track presence would come because they would do business with the IndyCar officials. They would see how it was being administered. Well, you take two races and just go off to the other part of the world. You can't do that. You can't bring these people in, have meetings that you need to have on a regular basis. Almost every IndyCar weekend, there's somebody there whose race is two or three races out meeting with IndyCar officials. So, you know, that's why what's one of the downfalls to having back-to-back races out of the country.
I guess the other concern would be, too, you'd have to take even more equipment as a precaution. What happens if you total your race car?
Right.
And then you go into race number two without a backup, so you'd have to bring even more backups, and that adds to the freight. So, yeah, you know, as much as, you know, my original thought would be it much more convenient for everybody just to make the long trip once, since we all go over there on Tuesday, Wednesday anyways, you just have a few more days. This makes the most sense. And I know you'd prefer to race domestically. We've had this conversation many times. You're doing it right now because you need to from a financial standpoint. And the good thing about Brazil is at least it's on virtually the same time zone. So it doesn't have a big impact on your television audience if the race actually happens when it's scheduled. So that will lead us to the next one. Some people have wondered why the race was called so early on Sunday. Why didn't they wait a little bit? And help me with this. Was it 3:30 Eastern?
Yes, it was 3:30
Eastern when we went off the air. Well, that's 4:30 in Sao Paulo, and it got dark there a little after 5 every day. So now after they went off the air at 3:30, it was chaos, and there are a lot of different people involved in this. It's not just IndyCar consulting with American television. It's banned TV. And a number I heard thrown out is that we had 15 million people watching on banned TV. I don't know if that's just television or if that includes their internet as well. They're online, but whatever. 15 million people, so they had a presence. And that's the big backer of this race. So they have a huge say, if not the final say, on what's going to happen. So we heard it's done for the day. And then as soon as I took my equipment off at 3:30, I'm looking out on a monitor, and I still see the drivers are sitting in their cars. So there was about another half hour, 45 minutes, where there was still a thought of trying to resume that race. But by the time we got to 4 o'clock Eastern, I'm thinking, and most of us are thinking, really, what's the point? There's no way you can run anywhere close to the rest of this race before it gets dark. So that's why it's called at that point. The other complaint I'm hearing a lot is, well, it was announced on TV, it's going to start at 1 o'clock the next day. And I've heard just a few minutes of the podcast from the show on Monday night, and you mentioned you got 75 emails complaining about that we announced 1 o'clock, you got to stick to that. My argument would be that if Versus did not air that race live, your complaints would have quadrupled or more so. You've got to air the thing live if the television partner will give you that. That was the complaint about ESPN, is that they wouldn't clear the time. Versus and NBC cleared the time. It's unfortunate that in the chaos of that 5 minutes when the race was postponed on Sunday, that we didn't have everything around. But we didn't know exactly what time the race was going to be contested to begin with. We didn't get that until about, I'm going to say, 4:30, 5 o'clock Eastern time, and then we got the green light that, okay, we can air it live, and it still was going to re-air at 5 p.m. That's, I think, what was already on the schedule. If the race had run Sunday, it was going to re-air at 5 o'clock, so that should have shown up on your DVR schedule, so that should have been there, so there was still an opportunity. So in my opinion, that's the best of both worlds, and I know Twitter seems useless to some of you, and it seems very juvenile. But really, when something like this is happening, if you really care that much and you've seen what's going on in the confusion between 3:30 on Sunday and the next morning, are you not checking online at some point? I know not everybody has a computer, unfortunately, but are you not checking to find out what time the race starts? Check IndyCar.com. It's a reason to follow people on Twitter. There's no perfect world, but I think they handled that the best that they can. It would have been great if we could have said 8 a.m., but we did not have that information, and that's the local promoter that's deciding that.
All that is absolutely true within the walls of the business that we work in. I get that. You get that. It makes reasonable sense to us. They provided the information as best as IndyCar could and Versus could. But if I can also understand that when you're watching the race and just before they go off the air, Bob Jenkins, who has an authoritative voice, says, it's at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Believe me, I had no reason, even being in the business, to even second guess Bob on that one. I had no, he didn't say the race will be run at 8 a.m. or 8 a.m. Eastern tomorrow and it will air at 1 o'clock.
I suspect the thinking behind that was, we don't know what time the race is going to be. All were assuming that it was going to be run in the morning, and I'm guessing at that time they just said, well, whatever time they run it, we're just going to air it at 1 o'clock so we can say something.
Again, I don't mean to be critical, but there was what was said was the race will be on at 1 o'clock. In fact, it was sometime thereafter, maybe an hour or so, and I thought, wait a second. They're going to, because I've been there, people are going to want to get on a flight late afternoon. You know, you're going to, all the teams and people there, otherwise you're giving away an extra day even yet.
It was pretty apparent when 1 o'clock was said, we knew there was no way that would be live. There was no way they were waiting till 2 p.m.
but
Brazil time to run that race.
That's us. That's me who's been there. That's you who are there. And the situation is, you don't think like that when you're watching television. And so when he says, the race is at 1 o'clock, it will be shown tomorrow at 1 o'clock, that's the only thing I thought of. And then I got a note a little bit later, and I thought, wait a second. And again, because I've been there and I understand the business, I knew that race was going to have to be run in the morning. But so what I'm saying is I understand how people are frustrated. And you're right, you would have heard just as much, or if not more, from people saying, you mean the race is going on at 8 a.m. and we can't watch it? Well, you know, welcome kind of the world of the way sometimes things work.
I guess my thought would have been if you really, you know, because we knew when you run the thing at 8 a.m., the rating is going to be zilch. I'm sure the rating was next to nothing on Monday morning. When they come out, we'll check on this. I would hope that for Monday, maybe you get credit for what happens at 8 a.m. and again at 5 p.m. in the re-air, and they combine those together a little bit. But my thought was the people that are going to watch this thing at 8 a.m. or 1 p.m. are your diehard fans who are probably going to be a little more proactive with social media, with IndyCar.com. Did the Star happen to have it in the paper on Monday morning?
I did, but here's the problem. And this was kind of a common theme from people. They checked their computer when they got to work Monday morning, and they had already set their VCR or their DVR for 1 o'clock.
Yeah, that's right.
And again, nobody's really to blame here. It's the unfortunate circumstance. I would set my tape machine.
Let's blame it on Bob then. Bob is saying what
Bob.
He was told to say.
He's tired.
Yeah, you know, in hindsight, you'd say it with more speculation.
Yeah,
well,
I think
it will run at 1 o'clock. But you check versus.com or whatever we're going to now.
You know what the phrase is, don't you?
NBCSports.com.
Now that you're a TV guy, you must know this phrase. Check your local listings.
Check your local listings.
That's a new phrase, but I'm gonna help you with it at this point.
All right. Okay. More to come. We'll talk about Donald Trump as we move into the Indianapolis 500 in just a little bit, and we'll get to some emails to KevinLee23 on Twitter. Kurt Cavan as well on Twitter. Stick with us. It's Trackside on 1070 The Fan. Thanks for staying with us. Trackside on 1070 The Fan with Kurt Cavan. I'm Kevin Lee. News here developing in the last couple of days. And by the way, thanks to all the kind comments on Twitter for the new IndyCar show on Versus that debuted yesterday. And as I mentioned on Twitter, thanks if you had negative comments for keeping those to yourself. IndyCar Open Wheel Weekly every Tuesday at 4 o'clock. It re-airs at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 Pacific. And we did have some news yesterday, and we're going to have more news on the show next week at 4 o'clock next Tuesday. Is going to be the first time you'll see the new IndyCar, and that'll lead us to the other part of this story. We learned that we'll see the car. It's going to be there either at the studio, which is at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, more likely somewhere on the grounds, and we'll just take the portable cameras out there and get a look at it. And then the other part of news that was broken on that show yesterday, which has already been talked about. You had something in the Star, I think, last Friday about that many of the owners are very resistant, and this came up a few weeks ago. We talked about Jimmy Vassar's quote as well, that they don't want new aero kits. They don't want to unveil them for 2012, hold those off for 2013. So people are saying, wait a minute, what are you going to unveil next week? Well, there still is a new car coming in 2012, but the owners would like them all to have the Dallara aero kits, the body kits, the look of the car, instead of multiple looks of the car. So that is the point of discussion, but we will at least, and that's what we were going to see anyways, first unveiled, because the others aren't finished yet. The Dallara, they have produced their own aero kit, which everyone will get, and then the plan was that then you have the option for others on top of that. Where do things stand with the owners reportedly voting 15-0 with Foyt abstaining to hold off for a year? And there's apparently some question, where does Ganassi even stand? Mike Hull has been quoted as saying he really wants, he's the managing director of Target Chip Ganassi Racing, he really wants to see choices for aero kits in 2012.
Well, and I think that's what you not only have told people, but you apparently got buy-in at one point earlier in this process. Certainly when the Iconic Committee came out last July and announced this, there were some questions raised, and I don't blame the owners for wanting to know, okay, what exactly are the costs? You know, I don't think this is really about the cost of aero kits. I think what it really boils down to is they're concerned about costs that unintended cost or costs they haven't seen yet. They've gotten a lot of general cost, what the car is going to cost initially, and I think that's all well and good, but a lot of these teams make their own parts. They hire out people to make parts for them at a next door neighbor kind of price. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways to save money. And many of these areas haven't been defined yet by IndyCar. And so that's a concern, kind of the undercurrent of what's going on. But I don't know. I mean, I was asked today on the Q&A, would you rather have new engines or new cars? Which would be more important to you? And my response was, I think the engines are more important because you've got manufacturers who can spend money to promote your series.
Yeah.
And these are names that people know. You know, if a couple of these aero kit manufacturers are aerospace type companies, mm-hmm. Boeing, does that make a difference to you as a consumer?
Or someone like Swift does it, or
exactly. Does that make a difference to the mainstream public? And I would argue that Chevrolet and Honda doing these is far more significant. And what it really comes down to, I think, for the fans, I think I can say this with some certainty, they want the cars to look different. They, you know, the people who have been watching this series have seen, you know, a field full of the same cars, you know, basically since 2003. They've had different engines in them for a period, and since 2006 they've had the same engines. But the fact that these cars are all the same is not going over particularly well. Some people have asked if it's bait and switch. I don't think it's that, because I don't think that's what IndyCar has done. You know, that's when you reveal a product, but maybe you only give three of them at Walmart. You only put three of them on the shelf, and you've advertised to 4 million people, and there's only three, but they want you to buy something else when you come in because, oh, those, that product's not available, we'll sell you something else. IndyCar didn't set out to switch on you. It's just that in this case, the people who are going to buy these cars and aero kits are kind of changing their mind. And we talked to, you brought this up last night. If they all decide they didn't want to play ball, IndyCar doesn't have much. That's its resource, yeah, is the teams, and the teams are a different small business essentially.
And they could conceivably, you know, you get into the debate, do you call their bluff or not? But they could conceivably take their ball and go home and move on to another series. Or how about this? This
start
really
their own.
Last time. Start your own. And, you know, and someone sent me a note on Twitter. Maybe it was an email. I apologize. I'm getting lost in the emails and the Twitter responses right now. But, you know, this day is similar to 1979, 1995. I don't know if I would go that far, but who knows? Who depends on, you know, there were some people I remember saying a year ago at this time that if you don't choose Delta Wing, then that's going to be the break in the series. And these owners like Chip Ganassi are so entrenched with the Delta Wing that if you don't choose it, they're going to leave. Well, that wasn't the case. Although Delta Wing did, I think everyone agrees, help lead us to this. The principles behind the Delta Wing help get us to this idea, and now we're taking a step back. So no coincidence that Mike Hull is of Ganassi is one of those that really wants this to move forward.
Well, and remember this about what Mike Hull said to me in that story, and I don't know if it was a couple days after the Long Beach race. I remember that because I remember when I spoke to him. But his point was, you've attracted these manufacturers with the idea, meaning Honda and Chevrolet in particular, Chevrolet and Lotus in particular, to bring their creativity, to differentiate the cars, to build a platform that they can promote themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're saying, well, no, we just want your marketing dollars and your engines.
Well, I think the only way, in my mind, that you don't debut these aero kits in 2012 as if the manufacturers are also behind this.
Well, apparently
multiple manufacturers.
Apparently they're sort of indifferent. I mean, they would like to do it. There is obviously some cost.
It's a lot of expense for not a lot of return. These things are going to cost a lot more than $70,000 to make.
But the reality is, whether you make them in 2012 or you make them in 2013, that cost still exists, and they've signed up to play ball that way. But, you know, it isn't just whether or not Honda, Lotus, and Chevrolet want to have aero kits. What about Boeing? What about these other manufacturers who want to get in IndyCar racing, and they want to get in IndyCar racing now? If they wait another year to get into IndyCar racing, you know, maybe they, I'm not saying they change their mind, but a lot of things can happen. Give it another year. You know, that's just a year lost of momentum for different looking cars. And the other thing, and I said this last night, and I don't think you've had a chance to hear it, but the thing is, this is, and I've mentioned this before, this is about three or four things now that IndyCar fans have been told was going to happen, or, well, basically put in those words, if not used in the exact language, that we're going to do this. The Lucky Dog, for example. We're going to have the Lucky Dog program, and yes, you know, it slipped out before they had actually sent a release out. But the point is, you're starting to hear a couple of these three or four things that they were going to do, and then now they're not going to do. And I'd be getting a little frustrated.
Though, because they still are planning on doing it, but it's the participants that are threatening to strike or what. I don't know what the recourse is. What are the owners saying they are going to respond with if IndyCar says this is our plan? Because keep in mind, you don't have to buy these aero kits. You can run the Dallara.
Well, that's just it. That's what's so, strange about it.
What's to stop IndyCar from saying, too bad, we made this announcement and we discussed this several months ago, and maybe there was this much of a pushback, or was there? What changed the owner's mind, if indeed they did change their minds, or have they always felt this way? Is it the added expense of Firestone, which, by the way, the owners voted on to add that increase?
Yeah, they did, didn't they? You know, I don't know all the answers because I haven't sat in that meeting. They've not allowed us to sit there and hear the pros and cons from every car owner. And all these, by the way, all these owners, when I get them on the phone, you know, boy, they want to sound supportive and they're trying. And I know that's not what they're saying in these meetings. You know,
they want to sound supportive of what?
Of themselves, first of all. They want to sound like they're not the ones complaining. You know, they go down the list. Well, it wasn't really me that was really. If indeed it was 15-0, which I don't think it was 15-0. Can't imagine Ganassi truly wants to have this postponed another year.
Yeah,
but if it was a large majority, an overwhelming majority, and then you tell me it wasn't you as a car owner. Come on, I'm smarter than that. But they're saying the right things out of the room. The point is, it's just. It's getting a little old to hear this little. I don't want to call it petty. It's just getting a little annoying, I think, from a lot of people's perspective. And it sounds like fighting over stuff that, like you said, happened in 1979 or happened in 1995.
Now, this issue is one, as we've talked about before, for the diehards, the people listening to this show. Marshall Pruitt did an online poll, and as of last night, he had well over 2,000 people that had voted, and 92% wants new aero kits and multiple-looking cars next year, which does not surprise me. And this kind of goes back to what you said, what's more important, engine manufacturers promoting the sport or this, and you're right that engine manufacturers promoting the sport, that's more likely to bring in new people. But this is for us. This is to keep us interested and keep us happy. So how important is it that this does indeed happen? Because the masses that are your diehards, your hardcores, are not going to be thrilled with this. Will they leave you?
I'm not sure. I quite understand. I understand the question. I'm not sure really how to answer it because, again,
I guess how...
You're not taking into consideration that the manufacturers may want it as well. They are just indifferent to when it's implemented.
Yeah.
And
I think if the manufacturers want it, then if you're Randy Bernard, you just say, too bad, guys, we're doing it.
Backtrack just a little bit. Remember that these cars were promised for 2011. There was a couple years ago, we're going to have new cars for 2011.
Oops. Well, and we almost didn't get them until 13. Randy Bernard pushed it to 2012.
Absolutely.
It was going to get pushed back again.
That's kind of my point here, is that people are frustrated by kind of the lack of either commitment or consistency. I'm not sure which is the better term for it. But there is a lack of something that's missing that is eating at people. And you can only make people irritated so many times.
So he needs to move forward with this.
I think he does.
Yeah.
I think he does.
I think that might happen.
Well, I don't know. He's
I guess the question is what's the recourse of the owners? What if he does?
Well,
how many would leave over this? If any.
I don't know how many would leave over this. This is kind of one of those, if you think about it in sociology terms, this is one of those things that just might be a small bit of the iceberg, or maybe a large, but you don't know until the iceberg is kind of coming down. But you know, this might not be the issue that sets off the really big argument, the cart split argument, but you also might have, it may set the next. It may make it easy for the next argument to grow larger than it needed to be.
Yeah, and that's something that Randy Bernard has to deal with. He has, as much as you'd like to say, you're the boss. You make the rules. The owners aren't ruling this. You have to listen to what they say. Just as the commissioner, as I said last night, just as the commissioner of basketball, of the NBA, of Major League Baseball, of the NFL, ultimately works for the owners in those sports. And when you, and that's a different.
Yeah, you kind of answered it your wrong.
It's a little bit different
way.
Because, you know, a lot of the issues there are player versus management, and he's going to side with management because that's who his boss is. But when he makes decisions about the sport, he's essentially listening to what the owners want to do there.
Right.
So, okay, next item is Donald Trump. And when Donald Trump was announced as the pace car driver, what, a month ago, it did not receive overwhelming approval from IndyCar Nation. And as we talked about, you know, I'm indifferent to Donald Trump. I really just think he's a character. I don't take him seriously. I think he's an actor with a lot of money. And my thought was, all right, it would not be my choice, but you need to find someone. You can use that pace car driver as a vehicle to promote the 500, and he is going to draw attention in non-motorsports avenues, like Inside Edition and things like that.
And you also knew going in that he had a relationship with Izod.
Yes.
And he has a...
And NBC.
NBC. Okay. So, now...
Well, he's always been controversial, but now he's moved to an entirely different level.
In the last month, probably.
In the last month, and you add in... Now, at the time, you had heard him mentioned as a possible presidential candidate. And I've heard this before, but I don't think any of us took that seriously at all. And I still don't take it very seriously, but I'm hearing people that know much more about this than I do on political shows saying that, well, I don't know that he's going to get the nomination if he enters, but he might hang around for a little while. So that adds a different dynamic. And I'm to the point now where you can still argue that this guy's going to get you a lot of attention, and he's such a lightning rod, and that's what you need. My fear is you can't have the driver of the pace car get booed on the grid. You do not want to detract from the event. So I'm to the point where I would recommend pulling the plug.
And I think that's the direction this will go eventually. I look for this to be settled pretty quickly. Either they're going to have to come out and say, and I think this is the more unlikely route, they're going to have to come out and say, look, we made a decision. We don't support his politics or the way he grabs attention, but this is the decision we made. Or, and I think this is the more likely path,
yeah,
they just say, this just isn't what we signed up for. And I think a lot of people... They also understand that they could win a pretty good public relations battle with the fans.
With the hardcore fans.
Yeah. The people that will be buying the tickets, the 300,000 yeah. people who will not be booing because they have moved a different direction. The question is now, if they do move in that direction, who drives that thing? And does Foyt, does he accept the fact he was second choice? Does it Mario? Is it Rutherford? Rutherford already has the role in the secondary spot, or at least in the race itself. The other thing about this controversy that you must bear in mind, and while this event is an auto race, let's be clear about that, it is a sporting event. It is also held with great respect for Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
And you do not... It's one thing to boo or cheer at the Daytona 500 in the middle of February. The Indianapolis 500 links itself to the Memorial Day weekend in a way that is patriotic.
Which is why Steven Tyler was such a big issue. You know, that the rendition did not personally offend me, but it did others. And I didn't serve in the military. My father did. And for those that do, and if it offended you, it you can't detract from that 45 minutes before the 500, and that's where we are with Donald Trump. And here's the other thought. Does Trump make a proactive strike? I wouldn't be surprised that we hear about a scheduling issue, and he pulls out himself. You know, and remember, it's not just Sunday that he needs to be there. He needs to get there and drive and go through the course to be able to go 100 miles an hour, whatever he needs to do. You can't just show up on Sunday and drive that thing in front of more than a quarter of a million people like that. So I just think the odds are very, very strong that Donald Trump will not be driving the pace car.
I'll be surprised if we do this show tomorrow night that we're not talking about this relative to someone else driving the pace car.
And then the question is, who? Do you look into other people? Probably the best way to go about it, as you said now, is to go to a foil.
They'll have to. They'll have to because, A, the scheduling and planning that it takes to get somebody like this, and I don't mean of this high profile, but just people have other schedules. You know, they don't just, I am available for 4 days in the last weekend of the month, and it's already May 4th. I mean, that's the first thing. But the other thing is, can you really expect anybody from the outside to step into this firestorm? Would you want to walk into, I'm the replacement for Donald Trump?
If you're a celebrity.
If you're a celebrity.
You know who'd do it? Charlie Sheen. I'm kidding, everyone.
Awful punchy being back from a place where you couldn't understand the language. Let's clarify something from last night that I said. I was looking for the fifth driver in the Sam Schmidt world. For some reason, I had looked at it wrong the other day. There are just four. Four that fall under the category of his contract, Sam's contract with them. Sam Schmidt Motorsports is going to field Alex Tagliani and Townsend Bell. He has the contract to Jay Howard that he has farmed out to Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan. Ray Hall's team has its own deal with Bertrand Baguette. I think that's where I was counting a fifth person, but that's actually Ray Hall's dealing. And then the other driver is Ho-Pin Tung, which Sam owns the IndyCar contract for him, and he will drive for Dragon. So that's how that shakes out.
Ho-Pin Tung, originally we learned of his name because he tested for Fast, which became Sam Schmidt Motorsports. So that's how that connection...
Correct. Well, Bowers continued. And Wilkins really is the one that struck the deal. That is the sponsorship behind Fast and then now Sam Schmidt's team.
So who else are we waiting for? I spoke with Dale Coyne on Sunday, and I said, when are we going to find out about who's driving your car? And he said, next week. I said, have you made up your mind? And he said, yes. Well, you tell me. No.
Well, excuse me. I had Alex in my brain.
Is who we think it is.
Alex Lloyd is, he's practicing the drive from his home in Carmel to Gate 9A. I mean, he knows, he thinks that's him. And I think everything points to that, and I think that's who Dale's going to run. It makes sense. A veteran, ran well in last year's 500. The wild card would be Martin Plowman. And I would say that if for some reason enough money came along for Martin's program to unseat Alex Lloyd.
And that's who Martin tested for?
Correct.
Okay.
So that's wasn't in the test very long, by the way. So that's where that one stands. And Dragon, now that they have the Ho-Pin Tung sponsorship, is trying to use the extra cash flow to put Simon Pagenaud in a car. That would not be a Hycroft car. That was Hycroft's initial plan. That part of the deal has kind of gone quiet. And so it would
be... Hycroft would not be involved with Dragon?
They may actually use the crew, but this would not be a Hycroft co-entered vehicle, as I understand it. Now, that's as of last Thursday or Friday. So, but they're still working to get Pagenaud in the car. And the Hycroft's owner is doing the negotiations, but it would not be a Hycroft entered car.
Willie in Huntsville asks, anything new on Buddy Lazier's prospects?
I still think he's the one that would be in Sarah Fisher Racing's second car if they got Carpenter in and speed was fine. They're going to have a second car in those last hours of the event. It needs to be somebody with experience that doesn't need a warm up and so forth.
It's a different dynamic because there are not two weekends.
Correct.
Can you, if you're thinking of doing that, still bring a guy out and put him in the car on Thursday.
Well, they might. Well, I said in
and
last...
then just say we're not going to attempt to qualify you get our guy in.
Of course.
But we've not really seen it happen that way. It's always, well, we'll get our guy in, and then all of a sudden you sign somebody on Sunday morning, and they go out there and try to do the bonsai effort, you know, and Bruno Junqueira gets out there and in four laps and puts it in the show. Why not run some laps on Thursday and just say this is the understanding?
Well, I think that happens more often than you realize.
Okay.
They just kind of sandbag through the week, and maybe they run him a little bit, and they get him kind of ready. But in this case, Sarah Fisher's primary obligation, and this is not a large team to begin with, needs to be with Ed Carpenter and Dollar General. And once they get things where they're comfortable, they'll start to roll out a second driver. And that's why I think it has to be an experienced person who knows the Speedway well, who's very good at the Speedway, and that's Buddy Lazier.
Although, you know, as I think through that, and the suggestion I just made still costs you, what, at least $100,000?
Oh, sure.
You would still have to do the engine lease.
Oh, sure.
To put that second...
But they have a second. Don't they have a secondary program for late in the week, or is it just one engine program?
I think
now?
They do, but it's not that much cheaper.
Now,
could you not just put Buddy Lazier in Ed Carpenter's car?
You could. A different size, different preferences, different weight, so forth. But
okay.
But I think. That's the person. Now, they haven't said that. They haven't even given me a hint on that. But Buddy Lazier's people have been pretty active, and. It been in communication with me. They haven't given me the team, but they say they've got somebody. Sarah Fisher has told me they have somebody in mind. They seem to add up because the musical chairs is about to stop.
I know Jacques Lazier has funding.
Could be Jacques, too.
But doesn't... I talked to him at Long Beach, and he said the problem right now is...
There's no teams.
There are no teams.
That's why I think it's Buddy, but...
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Okay. All right. Coming up in a moment... We'll have news on the Centennial Celebration, which has been airing here on Sunday mornings here on 1070 The Fan and also WIBC, and some other notes as well. Coming up, Trackside, 1070 The Fan, the talk of Gasoline Alley with Donald Davidson, still to come. I'm Kevin Lee. I'll let Kurt go home since he carried the weight the last couple of nights. Just a couple of minutes left. I'll go over a couple of emails and dispense some information. It doesn't necessarily affect Kurt, or we do not need his insight on this. And then Donald is here, and the talk of Gasoline Alley is coming up. You can jump on board now at 239-1070, 239-1070, area code 317, if you're listening at 1070thefan.com. Okay, we've talked about the Centennial Celebration before. We're up to, I think, episode 8. The 90s, is that what's coming up this weekend?
No, this past decade.
Oh, we're that far.
We're that far along.
I've literally been out of the country and not paying attention. I was not able to listen this past weekend, so we've got three more episodes left. We're going to look at this decade. Is this the weekend where we're doing a lot of stuff on IMS Radio and Sid Collins, or is that next week?
That's next week. This week we're going to look at the stars of this era, the last... Well, really, we said the decade, but I think we're going back a little bit, even back into the early... days of the IRL, as well as this past decade, and then also the women of the 500.
Okay.
Not just Sarah Fisher and Danica, but also Janet Guthrie and Lynn St. James.
Okay, and then the next one I know has IMS Radio, Sid Collins,
right.
A few other things in store for that, and I'm going to work on something for the last episode on the future of the 500 and just get some opinions from different people there. But one of the things we've often heard most is people wanting a podcast. We now have a podcast. It's been cleared by the grand poobahs here. We love for you to listen live. It supports our sponsors, and that's kind of the idea behind the business of broadcasting. But we also understand not everybody can listen all of the time, and we're spoiled with DVRs and things like that, that we listen at our own leisure. Well, now you can do that. All of the 7 previous episodes are now archived at 1070thefan.com. Go to the 500 page. So really, if you want the full address, it's 1070thefan.com/Indy500/, which is also the same as Indy500coverage.com. A few different ways to get to it. I will tweet something later tonight and put the link. I've got a bit link up there for that as well. So thanks to Matt Scheidler at Interactive for getting that done and other things. You know, the joke when we were talking about Donald Trump that obviously I left on the table is if what I think might happen is that, you know, he could be told what he tells everyone on his TV show, you're fired. Although I still think that it's probably going to be resolved another way, but we shall see. I have no inside information on that, but we will wait and see what develops. Maybe, as Kurt said, maybe something as soon as tomorrow. Well, as always, I ran long and ran out of time to get to a couple of emails that I wanted. So the great thing is we'll be back tomorrow night at 7 o'clock talking about all things IndyCar and the Indianapolis 500. We have another hour to go to talk about the history of the 500, nostalgia questions for Donald Davidson. 239-1070, the talk of Gasoline Alley is next on 1070 The Fan.